Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a company whose ingredients touch almost every aspect of your daily life, from the unique taste of your morning coffee to the comforting scent of your favorite shampoo, and even the functional benefits in your daily supplements. For over a century, International Flavors and Fragrances, or IFF, has been that silent, ubiquitous architect working behind the scenes to shape our sensory world. But in recent years, this company, a titan of its industry, has faced what we can only describe as a bet the company challenge, following a truly massive and transformative merger.
Exactly. We are talking about a critical inflection point for a company that has existed for 135 years. It's quite something. Our deep dive today is into IFF's landmark merger with DuPont's Nutrition and Biosciences business back in 2021. This wasn't just another acquisition. It was, you know, a deal that fundamentally redefined the entire flavors, fragrances, and ingredients industry.
Right.
We're going to explore the significant operational and financial challenges that followed, from the intricate complexities of integration to a severe period of customer inventory destocking and even the relentless pressure of raw material inflation. Most importantly, we'll examine how a new leadership team is now executing a comprehensive and, frankly, quite aggressive strategic overhaul to navigate this storm.
Okay, so our mission today is to cut through all that complexity and extract the most important nuggets of knowledge for you. We'll assess this nascent turnaround strategy, evaluate the underlying strength of IFF's core businesses against its formidable global competitors, and map the company's path towards stability and, hopefully, sustainable growth. We want to understand not just what happened, but why it matters to the broader economic landscape, to other companies navigating their own growth challenges, and maybe even to what you find on your supermarket shelves. So as we set the stage, what stands out to you as like the most critical element in IFF's recent journey?
What's truly fascinating here, and what becomes the central thread of their story, is how the company's heavily leveraged balance sheet has become its primary constraint. This isn't just a financial detail. It's like a straitjacket that has directly dictated some truly difficult strategic decisions. We're talking about actions like a significant dividend reduction and even the major business divestitures of high-performing assets. It's a textbook case of how overwhelming financial pressure can directly dictate a company's strategic direction, forcing management to make incredibly tough choices that, you know, go against conventional wisdom sometimes.
That's a powerful way to frame it, this idea of financial pressure forcing strategic hands. So let's dive right into what this new IFF looks like, this global leader that was forged by this massive merger. It's truly a different beast now, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Following that monumental 2021 merger with DuPont N&B, IFF didn't just grow. It fundamentally transformed. It emerged as a vastly expanded global leader in high-value ingredients and solutions. To give you a sense of the scale, this deal effectively more than doubled IFF's previous size and significantly expanded its market presence. It created what was envisioned as, well, an unparalleled powerhouse in its space.
And when you say vastly expanded, you're talking about a company whose pro forma 2020 revenues, that's what their combined revenues would have been if they'd been merged for that full year, exceeded $11 billion. That's huge. That's a company now serving approximately 18,000 customers across a massive, diverse range of markets, food and beverage, home and personal care, and that rapidly growing health and wellness sector. That's a significant leap, not just in size, but in the breadth of their influence.
Absolutely. On paper, this strategic rationale for this merger was incredibly compelling. The core idea was to create an unrivaled leader by combining IFF's historical strengths in taste and scent, what they'd been known for decades, the very essence of their brand, with N&B's deep leadership in texture, nutrition, and health. This combination was projected to give them number one or number two market positions in many highly attractive high-growth categories, all backed by, supposedly, a best-in-class R&D platform that combined the scientific prowess of both entities.
So if you're thinking about your daily life, you're now looking at a company that influences what's in your morning yogurt, how your favorite laundry detergent smells, the texture of your plant-based burger, and even the probiotics in your daily supplements. Before they were big and influential, now they're truly global behemoths influencing nearly everything you consume or use. That was the grand vision, at least.
Precisely. That was the vision. But as we'll soon discover, the execution, as is often the case with such massive integrations, well, it brought with it a tremendous amount of complexity and unforeseen challenges.
Which brings us to how this massive new entity structured itself. How did they actually try to organize these incredibly diverse businesses? And what do its individual pieces look like now? Because the initial structure seems to have been part of the problem.
That's a key point. Initially, IFF's operations were structured into four primary segments. However, the sheer breadth and diverse nature of that post-merger portfolio almost immediately created significant operational complexity. It actually masked diverging performance trends within those segments, making it really difficult to understand where the real strengths and weaknesses lay. This opaque structure then directly led to necessary strategic shifts even after the merger had closed, because it became clear quite quickly that the original post-merger organizational design simply wasn't going to work effectively.
Okay, so let's unpack those segments for us. Let's start with Nourish, which was initially their largest and perhaps most complex segment.
Right. Nourish was an ambitious combination. It brought together IFF's legacy flavors business, the taste component, with a substantial portion of DuPont's food and beverage ingredients. We're talking highly technical areas like texturants, food protection solutions, and even the burgeoning field of plant-based proteins. But here's the critical insight for understanding IFF's current trajectory. The company quickly realized this segment was simply too diverse. It was trying to be too many things to too many customers. So starting in the first quarter of 2025, they began reporting Nourish as two distinct units, taste and food ingredients.
Ah, okay, so they split it up.
Exactly. This immediate formal separation was a huge signal. It clarified performance instantly. In Q1 2025, the taste business delivered strong 7% comparable currency neutral sales growth, meaning adjusting for currency fluctuations and divestitures, it's a growing business. However, the food ingredients business actually declined by 4% in the same period, primarily due to persistent weakness in areas like protein solutions. This split wasn't just an accounting change or some bureaucratic reshuffle. It was an explicit acknowledgement that the original post-merger structure for Nourish was simply too broad, too unwieldy, and frankly too opaque to manage effectively or to provide investors with a clear picture of its underlying health.
That's a huge operational and strategic signal right there. It shows they're trying to get a granular handle on what's truly working and what isn't. It's like they were trying to run a gourmet bakery and a bulk flour mill under the same P&L, and now they've decided they need to separate those operations to truly understand each one. What about Scent, their traditional stronghold? How has that fared amidst all this change?
Scent has consistently been IFF's traditional and highly profitable fragrance business. It encompasses a wide range from high-end fine fragrances that go into luxury perfumes to personal care products like lotions and soaps, and even home care items like detergents and air fresheners. This segment has been a remarkable source of stability and strength for the company. It delivered an impressive 12% comparable currency-neutral sales growth for the full fiscal year 2024 and maintained a healthy 4% in Q1 2025. A significant driver here has been the double-digit growth in the high-margin fine fragrance category, indicating resilient demand for luxury and premium products, even in, you know, uncertain economic times. It truly is the consistent star performer in their portfolio.
Okay, good to know. And health and biosciences, or H&B, which largely came from DuPont N&B, how did that business fare in the immediate aftermath of the merger?
H&B, which is a powerhouse of biotechnology, includes essential ingredients like enzymes for food and industrial applications, food cultures for things like yogurt and cheese, and probiotics for gut health. This segment also showed remarkably resilient performance. It posted 5% comparable currency-neutral sales growth in Q1 2025, driven largely by its health and food biosciences components. It's a solid performer that brings a lot of the cutting-edge biotechnology and scientific muscle that was a key part of the strategic rationale behind the DuPont acquisition. It's highly technical and directly aligned with modern health and wellness trends.
Right. Finally, Pharma Solutions. This one is particularly interesting because despite its strong performance, IFF has announced its intention to divest it. Can you explain that seeming contradiction? Why would a company sell off a successful part of its business?
This is a truly counterintuitive point, and it underlines the sheer financial pressure IFF is under. Pharma Solutions is a specialized segment that produces pharmaceutical excipients. These are critical functional ingredients that are essential for the formulation and delivery of medications. It actually performed very well, showing a robust 8% comparable currency-neutral sales growth in Q1 2025. However, despite this strong and consistent performance, IFF has indeed announced its intention to divest this segment. This decision is not because the business is underperforming, but because it's part of a broader aggressive portfolio optimization and, crucially, a deleveraging strategy. It's a quality asset that can fetch a good price, and that price is desperately needed to pay down debt. We'll delve deeper into why a company would choose to sell a high-performing asset later, but this decision stands as a stark indicator of the intense financial constraints that are dictating IFF's strategic moves. It's a clear trade-off. short-term financial stability over long-term strategic fit.
So these segments clearly show IFF's incredible reach across so many consumer products. But what about the fundamental economics of how they actually do business? They've always boasted about this sticky business model, haven't they? What does that mean exactly?
They absolutely have, and it's a powerful aspect of their core value proposition. IFF operates as an innovation and co-creation partner for large consumer packaged goods, or CPG companies. What's fascinating here is that their ingredients, whether it's a unique flavor, a signature scent, or a crucial functional component like a texturant, typically represent a very small fraction, often less than 1%, of a finished product's total cost.
Okay, tiny cost percentage. But they are absolutely fundamental to its sensory profile and overall appeal. So if you're a major CPG company and IFF provides the unique flavor for your best-selling yogurt or the distinct aroma for your flagship detergent, well, changing that ingredient is not a trivial matter. It's a massive undertaking, isn't it?
Precisely. Reformulating a successful product to change a key ingredient is both incredibly risky and extremely expensive for CPGs. Imagine a major beverage company whose best-selling soda gets its unique taste from a specific IFF flavor blend. If they were to switch suppliers, they would have to reformulate the entire product, conduct extensive taste tests, run regulatory approvals, potentially retool manufacturing lines, and then remarket the product to ensure consumers accept the subtle or not-so-subtle change. This is a huge, costly, and time-consuming process. This dynamic should theoretically create a very sticky business model for IFF, with high switching costs for customers, providing IFF with a strong competitive moat. It's why they can charge a premium for their expertise and unique ingredients.
That sounds like an ideal competitive position to be in, but you mentioned earlier that this theoretical strength was tested by post-merger execution issues. What happened there? How did a sticky business get unstuck, even temporarily?
Well, this is where the theory met the harsh reality of integration. The operational challenges that IFF experienced in 2022 and 2023 were significant. We're talking about things like supply chain disruptions, inconsistent product quality, and unreliable delivery times. Direct consequences of trying to merge two massive, complex global supply chains. These issues severely strained those very customer relationships that were supposed to be sticky.
Yeah.
If IFF can't deliver on time or the quality isn't consistent, even if their ingredient is crucial, a CPG company eventually has to look elsewhere, right?
Yeah, eventually you lose patience.
Exactly. This suggests that their essential partner value proposition was temporarily undermined by their own internal struggles. These operational difficulties contributed significantly to the severity of the customer destocking cycle they experienced, which actually appeared more pronounced for IFF than for some of their key competitors. This indicates that the issues weren't purely market-driven, but were significantly exacerbated by IFF's own operational shortcomings, making that competitive moat temporarily shallower. It's like that boat we mentioned earlier, trying to navigate a storm, but also springing its own leaks, making the journey far more perilous and eroding customer trust.
That's a powerful analogy for how internal issues can magnify external pressures. So while the business model is powerful, IFF operates within a specific competitive arena, and that arena just got a lot tougher, especially with some major industry realignments. Let's shift our focus to the broader competitive landscape and market dynamics, starting with the global flavors and fragrances market itself. What's the fundamental health of this industry?
The global F&F market is a truly significant one, estimated at a substantial $35-40 billion for 2024-2025. And it's not just big. It's projected to grow at a healthy compound annual growth rate of, say, 3.7% to 5.4% through 2030. What's fundamentally important to understand about this industry is that it's largely defensive. It's intrinsically linked to non-discretionary consumer staples, things people buy regardless of the economic climate, like food, beverages, and household and personal care products. So even when economic times are tough, people still need to eat, clean their homes, and use personal care products. This underlying stability makes it a very attractive sector for long-term investment.
So the stability of this industry makes it an attractive place for investment because it's tied to fundamental consumer needs, and that projected growth isn't speculative. It's driven by clear long-term consumer shifts that aren't going away anytime soon. What are some of those key growth drivers that companies like IFF are trying to capture?
Several durable megatrends underpin this growth, making the industry incredibly resilient. First, there's significant demand in emerging markets. Rapid urbanization, rising disposable incomes, and the expansion of a burgeoning middle-class consumer base, particularly in regions like Asia-Pacific, are fueling a huge demand for packaged foods and branded consumer goods. As people move to cities and gain more purchasing power, they shift from basic commodities to value-added branded products that contain IFF's ingredients. We've seen IFF make significant investments in regions like India, for example, directly addressing this opportunity by expanding local R&D and manufacturing capabilities.
And then there's the pervasive global focus on health and wellness, which seems to be accelerating every year.
Absolutely. This is a powerful consumer-driven shift. People are increasingly seeking healthier options, which drives demand for functional ingredients and solutions that enable the reduction of sugar, salt, and fat in food products, all without compromising on taste or sensory experience. Think about low-sugar yogurts or reduced-sodium soups maintaining flavor while removing undesirable components is a complex scientific challenge that companies like IFF are uniquely positioned to solve through their specialized flavor and ingredient solutions.
What about the natural and sustainable trend? That's a huge one for environmentally and health-conscious consumers today.
It is, and it's a massive area of investment. Consumers are increasingly demanding clean-label products with natural and sustainably sourced ingredients. This trend is a major focus for R&D and innovation across the entire F&F industry, profoundly favoring large-scale players like IFF with the capital and scientific expertise to develop these complex, high-value ingredients. Only the big players can really invest in the deep research and complex supply chains needed for truly sustainable and natural solutions that meet both consumer expectations and regulatory requirements.
And despite all the healthy eating trends, the sheer convenience and continued demand for processed foods still remain a strong driver.
Precisely. The convenience economy is here to stay. The continued demand for convenient, ready-to-eat meals, snacks, and prepackaged solutions drives the need for sophisticated flavor and texture systems to enhance the sensory experience of processed foods, making them both appealing and functional. Even in a health-conscious market, convenience is king, and IFF provides the technical backbone for that.
So this steady growth sounds incredibly promising for the industry as a whole, but who are the dominant players capturing it? It's not an open field where anyone can just jump in, is it?
Far from it.
Yeah.
The F&F industry is highly concentrated. It's essentially a tight oligopoly. The top four global players, Givaudan, Dizem Firmenich, IFF, and Symrise, collectively command approximately two-thirds of the entire market. This isn't just a list. It defines the competitive dynamics.
Okay, two-thirds held by just four companies. So this highly concentrated structure creates significant barriers to entry, effectively protecting the incumbents from new competitors. These aren't easy businesses to break into then. What exactly are those barriers that keep new players out?
The barriers are indeed formidable, acting like towering walls around this exclusive club. First, you need immense scale and global reach to serve the multinational CPG clients who operate across continents. A small regional player simply cannot meet the supply chain and regulatory demands of a global food or personal care giant. Then there's the R&D intensity. It requires sustained, significant investment in cutting-edge research and development to create novel ingredients, discover new flavor molecules, and develop proprietary technologies. This isn't about mixing things in a kitchen. It's about deep, long-term scientific research that can cost hundreds of millions annually.
And it's not just about the science and the money, is it? The relationships seem equally crucial.
Exactly. Customer intimacy is paramount. These are deep, long-standing relationships with customers, often involving co-development of products, where IFF scientists work hand-in-hand with the CPG company's R&D team for months, even years, to perfect a new product. These deeply embedded partnerships are incredibly difficult for new entrants to replicate. It's not just a transaction, it's a strategic partnership. And finally, regulatory expertise. Navigating the complex and varied global regulatory landscape for food and cosmetic ingredients across dozens of countries, each with its own specific rules, requires vast resources, specialized legal teams, and deep scientific knowledge. These aren't just high hurdles. They're veritable mountains that protect the established players.
But even within this exclusive club, competition has intensified, and IFF's recent struggles have given its rivals a significant advantage. What changed in this competitive landscape that made it even tougher for IFF?
The competitive landscape definitely intensified significantly after the 2023 merger of DSM and Firmenich. That created a third powerhouse competitor, DSM Firmenich, now standing shoulder to shoulder with Givaudan and the enlarged IFF. This new dynamic means there's significantly less room for operational error for IFF. The market is now essentially a triumvirate at the top, making the competitive pressure immense.
So IFF is now directly competing against two other incredibly well-integrated, highly profitable leaders in Givaudan and Dizem Firmenich, both of whom have strong track records.
That's it. In this context, IFF's post-merger execution stumbles are particularly damaging. Because if customers experience issues with IFF, whether it's inconsistent quality, supply chain delays, or a lack of responsiveness, they have two other highly capable, well-resourced global partners they can turn to. This puts immense pressure on IFF's new management to execute its turnaround flawlessly and quickly, to regain lost ground and reestablish its competitive standing. They simply cannot afford further missteps.
And we can see this isn't just theory. The numbers directly illustrate IFF's relative underperformance. Looking at the competitive landscape data, IFF's LTM, or last 12 months, revenue growth was actually negative 0.5%. Their sales shrank slightly. This significantly lags Givaudan, which saw robust 7.2% growth, and Symrise, with a solid 3.1% organic growth. Similarly, when we look at profitability, IFF's adjusted EBITDA margin of 19.2% is noticeably below Givaudan's 23.8% and Symrise's 21.7%. These aren't just minor differences. They are clear indicators of the significant uphill battle IFF faces to catch up to its peers in terms of both growth and profitability.
It truly is. This competitive backdrop is absolutely vital to understanding IFF's recent financial journey, which has been anything but smooth. It shows that even in an attractive defensive industry, execution matters immensely, especially when you're facing such fierce competition.
Let's delve into that financial performance then, because it really tells the story of the cost of growth and the debt reckoning that has defined IFF's recent past. First, this idea of growth at all costs and the acquisition-fueled revenue surge. What does that picture look like?
IFF's reported net sales soaring from approximately $3.0 billion in 2015 to $11.5 billion in 2024 is, on the surface, quite remarkable. That's a more than threefold increase in less than a decade. However, what's absolutely critical to note and a core part of their current predicament is that this rapid growth was not organic. It wasn't driven by selling more stuff. It was driven almost entirely by two major transformative acquisitions, Frutarom in 2018, which is a significant deal, and then, of course, the truly massive merger with DuPont's N&B business in 2021.
So while these deals delivered immense scale, instantly propelling IFF to a different league in terms of size, they also introduced significant operational complexity and, crucially, brought in businesses with inherently lower profit margins into the portfolio. This wasn't just about getting bigger. It was about fundamentally altering the company's financial profile and underlying economics.
Exactly. Looking at the historical financial summary, you can clearly see those dramatic revenue jumps post-2018 and especially after 2020. But crucially, this isn't matched by a similar jump in profitable growth or even consistent profitability. That stark reality brings us directly to the core financial pain point for IFF.
And that pain point is vividly captured by their profitability pressures and the multi-billion dollar write-downs they've had to record.
This shift is glaringly evident in their profitability metrics. Gross margins, which were consistently in the healthy 43-45% range prior to the Frutarom acquisition, have since compressed significantly, settling at just 35.9% in 2024. This structural change largely reflects the integration of DuPont's large-scale ingredients businesses, which, as you noted, operate at inherently lower gross margins than IFF's legacy, highly specialized flavor and fragrance compounds. They simply make less profit on each dollar of sales in these new areas.
And the really eye-popping numbers are those goodwill impairment charges. We're talking about massive non-cash charges that have absolutely decimated JAP operating and net income in recent years. What exactly are these goodwill impairment charges and why are they so significant?
This is a critical point to understand. The company recorded GAAP operating losses of $2.1 billion in 2023 and $1.3 billion in 2022. Primarily due to writing down the value of acquired assets. Now, what is goodwill? When IFF bought these companies, especially DuPont N&B, they paid a price that included not just the physical assets like factories and equipment, but also an intangible value or goodwill. This goodwill accounts for things like brand reputation, customer relationships, proprietary technology, and the expected future growth prospects of the acquired business. It's the premium you pay over the tangible assets based on the belief that the acquired company will generate significant future earnings. However, when those future prospects don't pan out or the businesses don't perform as expected, which clearly happened here, accounting rules require companies to write down or impair that goodwill. It's a non-cash hit, meaning no actual money left the bank that day, but it's a huge public admission that the acquisitions fundamentally haven't delivered the value they were expected to. It effectively erases billions from the balance sheet, representing a permanent destruction of the shareholder equity that was used to fund the deal. It signals flawed M&A execution and an overpayment at its core.
And it continued into this year, with an additional $1.15 billion taken in Q1 2025. This really highlights the severity of the miscalculation and the persistent impact of these deals.
Indeed. These continued charges demonstrate a prolonged struggle to realize the anticipated synergies and value from the acquisitions. Even on an adjusted basis, which strips out these impairments and other special items to give a clearer picture of ongoing operations, IFF's adjusted operating EBITDA margin of 19.2% in 2024 still lags Givaudan at 23.8% and Symrise at 20.7%. This clearly shows a persistent need for operational improvement and cost efficiencies to bring their core profitability in line with peers. The combination of lower structural margins, higher earnings volatility due to these charges, and significant asset write-downs really demonstrates a fundamental change in the company's financial profile. It's transformed from what was once considered a high-quality, predictable compounder to a much more complex, lower-return industrial entity now undergoing a major turnaround.
And these profitability issues are intrinsically linked to the company's biggest financial hurdle, debt. This dominant constraint of a heavily leveraged balance sheet has really shaped everything they've done lately.
It truly is the dominant constraint, the elephant in the room. Total debt stood at a staggering $9.36 billion at the end of 2024. That represents a dramatic increase from just $1.27 billion at the end of 2015. This enormous amount of high leverage became IFF's primary financial constraint, forcing a radical and often painful shift in capital allocation priorities. The focus moved completely away from shareholder returns, which used to be a hallmark of the company, and squarely toward debt reduction. This wasn't a choice, it was a necessity.
And the most stark and perhaps most painful illustration of this was the decision to cut the quarterly dividend by 50% in late 2023, slashing it from $0.81 to 40 cents per share. It wasn't just a strategic choice for optics, was it? That was forced.
No, it was absolutely a necessity, a direct consequence of the immense debt burden. That dividend cut was directly linked to the company's urgent negotiations with its lenders to amend its credit facility and gain crucial covenant relief. The amended agreement explicitly restricted dividend payments and prohibited share repurchases until specific leverage targets are met. This highlights the absolute severity of the financial strain the company was under. It was forced to trade shareholder returns and investor goodwill for financial flexibility, and frankly, the avoidance of a potential covenant breach, which would have had even more severe consequences. It shows that when debt reaches this level, the lenders effectively become co-pilots in managing the company's finances.
What does it truly mean for a company, one that was once a reliable dividend payer and a darling for income investors, to effectively be told by its lenders what it can and cannot do with shareholder returns? It really shows who holds the power when debt is this high, doesn't it?
It means that the lenders are effectively sitting in the driver's seat for critical capital allocation decisions. It's a clear indication that financial health, specifically deleveraging, has become the paramount objective, superseding almost everything else, even the gratification of its shareholders. It implies a significant loss of autonomy for management that they are now desperately trying to regain. For the average investor, it's a bright red flag that cash flow is tight and the company is prioritizing survival and financial stability over rewarding its owners in the short term. It's a fundamental shift from investor-friendly to lender-controlled.
This financial pressure, this absolute necessity, brings us directly to the operational challenges that triggered such a drastic response. It sounds like they navigated a perfect storm from 2022 to 2024, with industry-wide destocking, persistent inflation, and some very significant self-inflicted wounds.
That period was indeed one of the most challenging in IFF's long history, perhaps even more so than any other in recent memory. It was defined by a confluence of powerful external macroeconomic pressures, forces beyond their control, and, as you aptly put it, significant self-inflicted operational wounds that exacerbated the situation.
So this unprecedented wave of customer inventory destocking in 2023 was a major headwind across the entire industry, correct? It wasn't just IFF.
That's right. It certainly hit many companies globally. After building up substantial safety stocks during the supply chain chaos of 2021-2022, remember the toilet paper shortages. Customers aggressively reduced their inventory levels in 2023 as supply chains normalized. This led to a sharp, sudden drop in order volumes for suppliers like IFF. This destocking cycle was particularly acute in their Nourish segment, specifically in functional ingredients, and also in pharma solutions. However, attributing IFF's downturn solely to external customer destocking is an incomplete narrative. It was certainly a headwind, but it doesn't tell the whole story.
Okay, so what were the self-inflicted wounds then? Where did IFF's internal decisions make things worse?
Here's where IFF truly struggled beyond the market trends. In an effort to free up cash and reduce their own working capital, IFF made an internal decision to aggressively reduce its own inventory levels. While that sounds financially prudent, it created a negative feedback loop for their manufacturing operations. It led to much lower production volumes at its manufacturing facilities, resulting in what's called unfavorable manufacturing absorption.
Unfavorable manufacturing absorption. That sounds like corporate jargon. Can you break that down for us?
Absolutely. Think of it this way. A factory has fixed costs. Rent, utilities, salaries for core staff, depreciation on machinery, whether it's running at 100% capacity or 50% capacity. If your factory is designed to produce, say, 1,000 units a day efficiently, but you suddenly decide to only produce 500 units to reduce your inventory, you're still paying for the full factory, the lights, the fixed costs. So each unit you do produce suddenly has to bear a much larger share of those fixed costs, making that unit much more expensive to manufacture. This directly and significantly compressed IFF's gross margins. Their own decision to aggressively cut their own inventory meant their factories were running well below their efficient capacity, turning what might have been a normal market downturn into a self-inflicted wound on their profit margins. It's like that boat analogy again.
Yeah.
They were bailing water while also drilling holes.
That's a fantastic explanation of how internal operational shortcomings, likely stemming from poor forecasting during the chaotic post-merger period, exacerbated the revenue decline with a self-inflicted margin squeeze. And on top of that, they were battling inflation.
Exactly. And this was further compounded by persistent high inflation across the board in raw materials, energy costs, and logistics. While IFF did implement significant pricing actions to try and offset these rising costs, the combination of sharply falling volumes due to destocking and their own aggressive inventory reduction, coupled with persistently higher manufacturing costs, proved overwhelming for profitability. It truly was a perfect storm where powerful external pressures met severe internal inefficiencies and missteps.
These overwhelming operational and financial pressures, naturally, led to inevitable changes at the top. So new leadership, new strategy, this sounds like a classic turnaround playbook unfolding.
That's precisely what it is. Eric Fyrwald was appointed CEO in early 2024, and he brought with him a well-earned reputation as a disciplined operator and a turnaround specialist from his previous leadership roles at companies like Corteva Agriscience and Syngenta. His initial actions and strategic priorities reflect a textbook classic turnaround playbook. First and foremost, simplify the portfolio. Second, stabilize operations and the bleeding balance sheet. And only then, after those two are firmly in hand, reinvest for sustainable growth. This also involves a significant refresh of the executive team and the board to bring in new perspectives, much needed operational expertise, and, you know, a fresh start.
And the core of this new strategy, then, is a relentless focus on portfolio rationalization. That means they're looking at everything they own and deciding what truly belongs.
Yes. The primary immediate goal of this rationalization is to divest non-core or underperforming assets. The motivation behind this is twofold. First, to generate cash to accelerate debt reduction, which we know is their paramount objective. And second, to allow management to focus its finite resources, attention, and energy on a more streamlined and, importantly, a more profitable core business. This strategic pivot marks a clear and dramatic departure from the previous bigger is better ethos that aggressively drove the mega merger. It's an admission that the previous strategy, while ambitious, led them into deep waters.
So this is a leadership change signaling a sharp pivot. You're seeing a fundamental reassessment of the company's very identity and its path forward. And the most significant and perhaps most telling aspect of this new strategy is the aggressive divestiture program selling off pieces of the company.
It really is the most telling action. The divestiture program is quite comprehensive and includes the sales of several diverse businesses: microbial control, savory solutions, flavor specialty ingredients, cosmetic ingredients, which includes the well-known Lucas Meyer Cosmetics brand, nitrocellulose, and, as we discussed earlier, most notably, pharma solutions. The sale of pharma solutions is the largest of these moves, and it's expected to close in mid-2025, with all proceeds dedicated specifically to paying down that colossal debt load.
Okay, so they're selling a high-performing, high-margin business like pharma solutions. That still sounds like a really tough, almost desperate call, even given the debt. Why would a company sacrifice a good asset?
It is an incredibly difficult but absolutely necessary choice, and it sends a very strong signal. It demonstrates unequivocally that repairing the balance sheet and reducing debt is the absolute top priority for IFF right now, even if it means sacrificing a quality, growth-oriented asset. This strategic trade-off makes IFF smaller in terms of overall revenue and scope, but the intent is to make it financially healthier, more resilient, and operationally simpler. It reflects that the strategic imperative has shifted dramatically from chasing synergy and integration, which was the merger's original promise, to achieving fundamental financial resilience and simplification. The bigger is better. Thesis has been decisively replaced by a better is better reality, even if better means shedding attractive businesses. This shows the brutal reality of immense financial pressure.
And this highlights the profound financial strain and the management's commitment to deleveraging. But selling off significant parts of the business also raises crucial questions about stranded costs and the ultimate profitability of this new IFF once the portfolio is reshaped. If you sell off a good chunk of your business, you might lose some economies of scale, or some corporate overhead might not shrink as fast as the revenue does. That could hurt the remaining core, right?
That's a very perceptive and critical point, and it's a major challenge in any large divestiture program. There's always a significant risk of what are called stranded costs. These are the corporate overhead expenses, things like centralized IT systems, finance departments, HR, legal, or even shared R&D facilities that were previously supported by the entire larger organization. When you sell off a business unit, the revenue and related direct costs associated with that unit disappear, but the corporate overhead doesn't automatically shrink in proportion. So the remaining core business is suddenly left to bear a disproportionately larger share of those fixed corporate costs. This can significantly impact the profitability of the remaining core, even if those core businesses are healthy on their own. It requires extremely careful management to ensure that the cost base truly shrinks in proportion to the divested revenues. The market will be watching very closely to see if the leaner, simpler IFF can truly achieve the margin recovery that's promised, or if the remaining core will bear a disproportionate share of the overhead, impacting its ultimate profitability. It's a delicate balancing act.
Despite all these challenges and strategic shifts, IFF still holds significant potential for future growth. So let's talk about those avenues, starting with innovation as the engine, particularly R&D reinvestment. This is their historical strength, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and R&D truly remains the lifeblood of the F&F industry. It's what allows companies like IFF to stay ahead. IFF is a major investor in innovation, with an annual budget of approximately $671 million dedicated to R&D and over 40 strategic university partnerships globally. The new leadership has explicitly identified strengthening the innovation pipeline as a key priority for 2025, which signals a strategic reinvestment and renewed focus after a period of integration-related disruption where perhaps R&D took a backseat to more urgent operational issues.
In an oligopolistic market like this, where there are only a few big players, true differentiation really comes from proprietary technology, doesn't it? So IFF's R&D capability, its ability to create unique patented ingredients, is its most defensible long-term competitive advantage.
Absolutely. Their ability to develop novel solutions for powerful consumer trends is what will ultimately set them apart from competitors and justify premium pricing. We've seen some interesting examples of their agility already, like recent innovations specifically targeting the evolving needs of GLP-1 consumers. That's a major emerging trend around weight management and appetite suppression, and new sustainable technologies, like Enviroki P for fabric care, which offers biodegradable encapsulation solutions for fragrances. These demonstrate an agile R&D function that's focused on identifying and capturing high-growth niches. This kind of consistent, cutting-edge investment is crucial for them to not only regain their competitive edge, but also redefine what that edge looks like in the future. Beyond direct R&D and proprietary technologies, IFF's broad portfolio is naturally aligned with some of the biggest shifts in consumer preferences that are shaping markets worldwide. How are they capitalizing on those consumer megatrends like health, wellness, and sustainability? Their broad portfolio is indeed incredibly well-positioned to ride these powerful waves. These megatrends act as fundamental tailwinds, driving sustained demand for the exact types of ingredients and solutions IFF provides. For health and wellness, for instance, their health and biosciences and nurse segments offer a wide and growing range of products, including probiotics for gut health, enzymes for digestive support, and plant-based proteins that cater directly to the surging consumer focus on healthier lifestyle and functional foods. They're right at the intersection of where consumer demand is headed.
And for sustainability, which is increasingly paramount for both consumers and major corporate customers who need to meet their own ESG goals.
The scent division, for example, has a strong focus on green chemistry and renewable ingredients, actively working to reduce its environmental footprint. This, along with the broader company-wide commitment to responsible sourcing and sustainable manufacturing practices, aligns perfectly with consumer and customer demands for more environmentally friendly products. This isn't just a nice-to-have anymore. It's becoming a fundamental business imperative. Furthermore, the broader industry shift away from synthetic ingredients and toward natural ingredients continues to be a powerful tailwind, directly benefiting players like IFF with strong capabilities in natural extracts and biotechnology. They're literally wired into the future of consumer demand.
So beyond innovation and these broad, powerful trends, what about the original grand promise of the merger itself? What about reevaluating cross-selling opportunities and capturing growth in emerging markets, which were such a big part of the initial thesis?
While the grand vision of seamless, widespread cross-selling across the entire merged portfolio has certainly been tempered by reality, and frankly, the operational turmoil of recent years likely made achieving significant cross-selling wins incredibly difficult, opportunities still exist within a more focused and stable portfolio. This is definitely a show-me story now. They need to prove it. It's entirely dependent on them first achieving consistent operational stability and building renewed customer trust. Once they're running smoothly, the potential for IFF to offer a CPG customer both a flavor and a texture solution, for example, from a single partner, remains compelling.
But the potential is still very much there, particularly if operations stabilize and the sales teams are truly aligned. Imagine a customer needing both a cutting-edge flavor solution for a new plant-based beverage and a unique texturant to improve its mouthfeel. IFF could potentially offer both from its taste and health and biosciences divisions if they execute well.
Exactly. And then there's the clear and undeniable opportunity in emerging markets. Particularly in Asia, these regions continue to offer the highest growth potential for the entire industry. IFF's long-standing investments in these areas, like their new state-of-the-art office in Hyderabad, India, strategically positioned them to capture this growth as consumer demand for packaged goods continues to expand globally. As these economies develop and populations urbanize, the demand for sophisticated flavors, fragrances, and ingredients will only increase, and IFF has the infrastructure already in place to capitalize on that.
All these growth opportunities and strategic shifts inevitably lead us to the crucial question of how the market values IFF, especially compared to its peers. Right now, there's a clear valuation discount, isn't there? The market isn't giving them much credit for future potential.
That's absolutely correct. IFF's valuation has been significantly impacted by its struggles and the challenges we've discussed, creating a notable discount relative to its historical trading ranges, and especially when compared to its highest quality peers. The market currently appears to be valuing IFF not as a premium quality compounder as once considered, but rather as a complex turnaround story with significant inherent risks. This means investors are demanding a lower price for each dollar of earnings or cash flow.
So how does that look in the actual numbers? How wide is this valuation gap?
On a forward-looking basis, using analyst estimates for adjusted earnings, IFF's price to earnings, or PE ratio, is currently hovering around 16 by 18x. This is a substantial discount to its pre-merger historical levels, which were often in the much higher 20x to 30x range. And its LTM, or last 12 months, EBITDA multiple, that's enterprise value to earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, a key metric for valuing companies with significant debt because it looks at the total value of the company relative to its operating cash flow, is around 16.3 times. This is a dramatic drop from its post-merger peak of nearly 26 times back in 2021. In stark contrast, Givaudan, their closest and most consistently high-performing peer, consistently trades at a premium EBITDA multiple of 22x or higher, reflecting its superior consistent execution and lower risk profile. The investment case for IFF, for anyone looking at it, really hinges on its ability to successfully execute this turnaround and close this significant valuation gap.
Okay, so there's a clear disconnect between what the company could be if it gets its act together and how the market is currently seeing it. A sum of the parts analysis, which values each business unit separately, might suggest hidden value, particularly in that high quality scent business you mentioned.
That's a crucial point. And a sum of the parts analysis is particularly relevant here precisely because of the distinct characteristics and differing profitability of IFF's various business segments and, of course, the active divestiture program. This approach does suggest potential hidden value that the overall market multiple might not capture. The high-quality scent business, with its strong margins, stable customer base, and premium brand equity, would likely command a much higher valuation multiple, perhaps closer to Givaudan's if it were a standalone entity. Conversely, the more commoditized and volatile parts of the food ingredients business, for example, would likely be valued at a lower multiple. The ongoing divestiture program is a practical step toward unlocking this value by crystallizing the market price for certain assets and allowing investors to better appreciate the value of the remaining core.
But, as we discussed earlier, it also creates uncertainty regarding potential stranded costs and the ultimate profitability of the new IFF once the portfolio is reshaped. So, what specific levers will IFF pull to close this valuation gap and regain investor confidence? What are the key things we need to watch for?
The future trajectory of IFF's valuation will be driven by three primary interconnected factors. First, and most critically, is rapid and successful deleveraging progress. The speed and success of debt reduction is the single most critical variable for the market. Achieving the company's stated target of less than 3.0x net debt EBITDA, that's their total debt, divided by their earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, a key measure of how much debt they have relative to their cash-generating ability, would significantly de-risk the equity and likely lead to a substantial multiple re-rating by investors.
And then there's margin recovery, particularly for that Nourish segment we discussed earlier, which has been underperforming.
Exactly. A demonstrated and sustained ability to restore adjusted operating EBITDA margins, particularly in the now separated Nourish segments, to levels that are more competitive with their peers is absolutely essential. This requires not just cost-cutting, but operational efficiency improvements and pricing power. Finally, reestablishing a clear, consistent, and predictable track record of organic volume growth after the recent volatility and destocking is crucial for rebuilding investor confidence. This means watching their quarterly earnings closely, specifically for progress on their debt reduction targets and for clear, tangible margin improvements in those newly separated Nourish segments. These are the three pillars on which the turnaround story rests.
Achieving these drivers means successfully navigating a landscape fraught with risks. The road ahead is certainly not smooth, even with the new strategy. What are some of those significant risk factors that could derail their progress?
The risks are substantial, and they have certainly been heightened by their recent strategic actions and the sheer scale of the turnaround. The most pressing is their high debt levels, which stood at a formidable $10.1 billion at year-end 2023. This substantial leverage severely constrains their financial flexibility, limits their capacity for future strategic investments, and crucially restricts shareholder returns. Remember, dividends are restricted and share buybacks are suspended. It also increases their vulnerability to economic downturns and any potential rises in interest rates.
And there's significant execution risk given the sheer complexity of this multi-year turnaround plan.
Absolutely. The company is in the midst of a complex, multi-year strategic transformation that involves not just selling off businesses, but fundamentally reorganizing operations and culture. There is significant risk that the turnaround plan, including the execution of these large-scale divestitures and the implementation of an entirely new operating model, may not deliver the expected benefits in the desired time frame, or even at all. Lingering integration and cultural challenges from the original merger could also continue to hamper operational efficiency, employee morale, and ultimately innovation. It's a huge undertaking, and history shows that large turnarounds often stumble.
And of course, the competitive landscape isn't getting any easier.
No, it's intensely competitive, dominated by a few very large, well-capitalized players who have been gaining ground while IFF has been distracted. Any missteps by IFF in execution, innovation, or customer service could result in a permanent loss of market share to highly capable competitors like Givaudan and DSM Firmenich. They are fighting in a high-stakes arena.
What about external risks, like raw materials and customer dynamics?
Right. IFF's profitability is very sensitive to price fluctuations in a wide range of natural and petrochemical-based raw materials, as well as energy and logistics costs. Their inability to pass on these cost increases to customers can lead to significant margin compression. Also, a significant portion of their sales is concentrated among large CPG customers. The top 25 accounted for a substantial 32% of sales in 2023. Consolidation among these customers can increase their negotiating power, and a downturn in global consumer spending could reduce demand for end products containing IFF's ingredients. Add to that a stringent and ever-evolving regulatory environment across the globe and significant foreign exchange exposure, and you have a truly complex and challenging risk profile.
These are all compounding factors. The amended credit agreements in September 2023, which provide temporary relief but come with strict conditions like restrictions on dividends and share repurchases, really highlight that narrow path management must navigate.
Exactly. The covenant, for example, requires a gradual step down of the maximum leverage ratio from 5.25x through Q1 2024 to a much tighter 3.75x by the end of 2025. As of Q1 2025, IFF was at 3.9x, which is in compliance, but it certainly leaves them very little room for error. While highly leveraged, IFF does maintain adequate liquidity, with $703 million in cash and equivalents and $1.5 billion available under its revolving credit facility as of December 31, 2023. However, the aggressive inventory reduction in 2023, which was painful for margins, was a necessary step to unlock cash in the balance sheet and bolster that liquidity. This situation requires strict adherence to the terms of its amended credit covenants. Any stumble, any miss of a target could lead to a potential covenant breach, underscoring the incredibly high stakes involved for this company and its future.
So, to bring it all together for you, IFF is a company in the midst of a profound high-stakes transformation. They undertook a truly ambitious merger that brought immense scale but also saddled them with significant debt and unforeseen operational complexities. Now, under new leadership, they're implementing a classic turnaround strategy, simplifying the portfolio by shedding non-core businesses, aggressively deleveraging through divestitures, even making the difficult choice to sell high-performing assets, and strategically reinvesting in their core innovation capabilities, all within a highly competitive and consolidating industry.
What we've seen today is a powerful illustration of the tangible and often brutal impact of financial pressure on corporate strategy. It explains why a company would take the painful step of cutting its dividend, or why it would sell a strong, profitable business unit like Pharma Solutions. It highlights the brutal reality of integrating massive companies and the intensified competition among industry giants in a surprisingly resilient market. IFF's journey is a powerful case study in corporate resilience, strategic pivots, and the very real consequences of ambitious M&A.
And this is where the story truly becomes compelling for you to think about. Will IFF successfully transform itself back into the premium quality compounder it once was, shedding the weight of its past acquisitions and operating with renewed focus and profitability? Or will the immense burden of its past deals continue to define its future as a more complex, lower-return industrial entity, forever marked by its merger ambitions? That's the critical question for you to consider as IFF's dramatic story unfolds.